afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, August 9th, 2022. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, Melody.
It's a hot, pardon?
No, it is. It is a scorcher out there.
It's a hot one today.
A lot of hot topics, too, or I should say hot potato topics.
Perhaps.
So you know what you should do? Celebrate National Book Lovers Day.
It's a great idea.
Buy something fun and meaningful and keep you cool in these remaining dog days of August. You know, this day in 1974, what's that, 48 years ago?
It's hard to believe.
Richard Nixon officially ended his term, and Gerald Ford was sworn in as president number 38. And I remember that day well, sitting not too far from where you live, in the living room of my friend's parents' beach house, watching the surreal events as they unfolded, and good old Tricky Dick waving his hands, waving goodbye as he headed on to Marine One.
You know, it really is interesting when you go back and you look at those days and you see where we are at today. It is... You know, because so many things began to unfold way back then. And a lot of the things happening back then is, you know, a lot of the results and situations that we have today. So it is. And then I think, too, that I'm 48 years older, too.
Now, wait a second.
Well.
But you're 39.
Well,
you know. People.
I've just read about it.
People
as though
do
I was
Melody's fuzzy math and
yes.
Figure it out in the end.
Yes, yes. I mean, this is a Happy National Book Lovers Day, so I must have read it in a book somewhere.
Nonfiction, of course.
Of course. Well, you know, gold today, we're looking, you know, it was weird. It was up 1801 for a high, settled back down at 1795, pretty much stayed there most of the day, went up a little bit and so forth, but up $5 at 1795. Silver was down 13 pennies at $20.62. Platinum was down 8 at 942. Palladium was down 16 at 2,296. So there was a little pressure on the dollar, not much, 0.04 at 106.34. Little pressure on crude oil, though I saw it was up higher because some things have been going on over there in the pipelines in Europe, 106.34. And the paper markets today, maybe they'll catch up tomorrow for that oil. I think the only one that we saw down was the NASDAQ significantly, a little over about almost 1.25%. 12,493. The Dow was down 58 points, 32,774. The S&P was down 17, 4,122. Asian markets, China was stronger, just 10 points, no biggie. Europe, same thing, was negative. The only one higher was the FTSE, 5 points. So it's like all the markets around the world are just kind of struggling, figuring out which direction they want to go to. 10-year yield was higher at 2.78%. 2.78%. So, you know, it's pretty much a lot of the same. And you know, we have some, you know, we're going to go ahead and we're going to talk about the worker productivity. You know, in the first half of the year, there were a lot more Americans that were working more hours. But in the first half of the year, the U.S. economic output actually declined. So what does that mean? That means productivity plunged. And so supposedly it's creating one of the weirdest economic phenomena that we, I always have problems with
that word.
I know. I can't figure it out. It's just a mental block. I can say tons of other things, but the Labor Department reported today that the, and that's why we stuck it in there. The Labor Department reported today that the labor productivity fell at 4.6% annually. The annual rate in the second quarter, which followed at a 7.7% drop in the first. So over the last year, productivity is down 2.5%. Now, this is the lowest it's ever been since the data that goes back to 1948. And
very good year for productivity, by the way.
It was a good year for 1948?
Yeah.
Okay. The pathway to higher incomes and a richer society runs through generating more economic output for every hour work put in. It's an alarming sign that the U.S. has been heading in the other direction so far this year. So, you know, worsening inflation in the sense that the prices wouldn't be soaring as much if the supply and goods and services were rising as quickly as you might expect. And again, I go back to it's more of a monetary problem. Printing too much money. It's a weakening of our dollar that is creating the major inflationary problems. But they like to blame the supply of goods and services. For quarter to quarter, the productivity numbers can be volatile to the point of meaningless. So I don't know, Dave. What do you think?
Well, I don't know either, Melody. The numbers, whether they're meaningless, misleading, or what have you, one possibility is that these weak productivity numbers over the past year are simply a mirage, something caused by measurement error. On the other hand, they might be worse than they're being reported. Fact is, it's all a guessing game to a certain extent, fill in the blanks, because, you know, it's all based on human data collection, and we humans are pretty gosh darn fallible, giving into our biases and what have you. But, you know, GDP, for example, currently understating economic output, some say, because of the hot, so-called hot labor market. But if that's the case, it would make these reported productivity numbers look worse than they are. On the other hand, I kind of think the government tends to under-report, don't you? I mean, I think whenever
you
they
mean
can...
Lie?
Well, you say tomato, I say tomato.
But it's the same thing.
But I get your point. Lawyers have added over 6 million jobs over the last year. It's about double the rate of hiring seen in the best 12 months of the prior decade. Various industries are trying to retool themselves as we speak. Now, the nature of a lot of those jobs are shifting. Now, it's possible this hiring pace that we're seeing the last year, roughly, means that more workers are needing more time to get fully trained and up to speed. Ah, therein lies the spin. Mm-hmm. And, of course, during that training time, not contributing as much to productivity as, you know, they eventually will. Well, here's the paradox. The booming labor market and falling labor productivity might be two sides of the same coin.
Well, you know what? It's interesting. My coffee maker broke, and I went to Bed Bath & Beyond to pick up a new coffee maker today. And there was hardly anybody in the store. If there was 10 of us customers, it's likely, and those are pretty big stores, Dave. And the funny thing about it is when I walked up to check out, there's one person in front of me, they're checking out, and there's a self-checkout scan next to me. And I don't use those. And the cashier should be appreciative, because the more consumers use those, the likelier they're going to lose their job, because they only they're not needed anymore.
Yep.
And plus, I'm paying for that person to be behind that counter. So, you know, I'm being charged for it with what I'm paying for my coffee pot. So why would I want to check myself out when I'm paying to have service? So, but I get a dirty look. You know, there's no one else in the store. There's a sales clerk, a young kid who's walking like two steps every 10 seconds. I mean, you know, a 100-year-old person could probably walk faster. And he comes around walking. And I guess she called for another checkout. And he eventually comes over. And she's still checking these people out. He eventually comes over, goes behind the counter, and just kind of stands there like, hurry up, lady. I don't want to open up the cash register to help this person.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is so much of a problem. And, you know, by the time I got up there, she's talking to him, talking about how two employees have called in sick, and they're all just talking about what more they have to do as far as work. And, I mean, it was really pathetic. But you find that everywhere. It's everywhere anymore.
Yeah. You know what I find is the biggest surprise in this discussion? That you bought that coffee maker in person. that you didn't order it online.
It took too long. I wouldn't have it for tomorrow morning.
Nope, I hear that.
I didn't have it this morning, so I had to get it. Broke this morning.
I wondered why I was at noon, just reading through today's news articles, and I'm thinking, boy, I feel sluggish today. And I did have a tough night's sleep, but just more sluggish than I normally do, particularly at noontime. And I got up to stretch and turned around, and I realized why. There was my mug of coffee, cold coffee, sitting on the top of the stove that I had forgotten to drink 4 hours earlier.
Well, cold coffee is just as good as hot coffee.
Yeah, indeed.
But when you look at productivity and you see that happening, it's really pathetic.
Well, you know, I think you raise an important part, and there's a really I don't even call it a fine line. There's a distinct connection between worker productivity and customer service.
Because that's all we do anymore.
In many cases, in service industries, that's the crux of productivity. So when you have a disgruntled employee, or, you know, a grumpy employee, you know, someone.
But I mean, it's everywhere. It's just how much the labor, you know, and I think a lot of the youth. Now, the woman was a little bit, and I don't mean to drag this on. The woman was a little to the older side, and the kid was just a kid. So, you know, you had a pretty big generation gap there. But I'll tell you what, it's everywhere. It's the attitude, not everywhere, but a large part of everywhere. The attitude of working and working hard and being productive, and people just want to show up and get paid for it anymore, and that's, you know, it's part of the problems anymore. And this is also what happens in a service industry. You know, I don't think people really like to wait on other people, you know. And but anyway, let's move on. Tomorrow there's going to be an important CPI report. It comes out at 8:30 tomorrow Eastern Time. It's the July Consumer Price Index. So everybody is there's people, you know, these so-called analysts and experts predict it should offer a little bit of a relief after the alarming signals that sent out by the last two inflation reports. And I'm sure you'll see a little bit of a softness there with the falling gasoline prices and, you know, some of the other energy products. You know, that might be able to bring it down, but to 0.2% for the month. Although it would still be the lowest since January of 2021. And, you know, some people are really looking at a negative number as a real possibility. The outlook is less favorable for core inflation. Of course, we have to exclude food and energy. That doesn't play an important part. But there, too, if core CPI rises but 0.5%, it would reflect a pullback from the 0.7 that was seen in June. But, you know, it's irrelevant anyway. I mean, how do you exclude two of the most important categories of prices that households spend their disposable income on, Dave? I mean...
Yeah, I mean, as a former numbers cruncher, you know, I tend to look at things in terms of how numbers relate to one another. And I think, you know, on the one hand, if and be suspicious of anyone who starts an argument with on the one hand. Because you know what's coming next is on the other, just to protect themselves. But I'm trying to show two sides here, I think, two possibilities. On the one hand, if as this consensus estimate is correct and CPI falls from 9.1 to 8.7 on an annual basis, that's 0.4%. I mean, that's you know, if it was a 4% drop from 4 to 3.6 or 3 to 2.6, you know, that's one thing. It's fallen from 9.1 to 8.7. That's different. So pay attention to that. Now let's continue with that thought. If you have a 0.4% drop every month for a year. And that's roughly a 5% reduction in CPI over the course of a year. And as I'll talk about in the third segment, you know, that sort of is in line with consumer expectations. I call wishful thinking of how households are seeing inflation in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now. So be careful what particularly the mainstream media, the corporate media is telling you, because it comes full of their own bias, their own corporate mission. You just have to not necessarily be wary, but be critical in how you view these numbers. That's all I think I need to say about that, Melody.
And, you know, it's right, because in the bottom line, the people are going to look at what they're spending. You know, it could drop from, you know, 9.1 to 6.7. But if they're still paying the same amount of money on things, those numbers don't mean anything. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Dave and I were having a lively discussion on that, on the bill that was signed today on the chip. I don't even remember what the chip manufacturing.
Bill?
Yeah, the bailout bill. Thank you very much. And it's just, you know, it's anyway. We'll save that maybe for tomorrow. And if you're not busy tomorrow, Dave, Butch won't be here tomorrow. So I'm not going to put you on the spot being on the air, but text me after the program. But so we were finishing up the CPI, and again, we're talking about all the money that's being spent. How many more billions have we already sent to Ukraine? Now we're going to send another billion. It's shipping its biggest yet direct delivery of weapons to Ukraine. Another $1 billion in rockets, ammunition, and other material to Ukraine from Defense Department stockpiles. Those are our stockpiles. Needed them.
What's $9 billion, Melody, in the whole scope of things when we spend $1 trillion on Afghanistan and on our adventure and misadventures? Afghanistan.
I speak
with tongue-in-cheek.
I know you do, and it's just – it's. And then people want to think that the inflation bill is going to actually go down. I mean, there's so many of these little giveaways and these bills and so forth that it's just a typical day in government, and it's just so wrong. But another $1 billion. And, you know, I don't even know what else to say in that. You know, Zelensky, I think we mentioned it yesterday, was crying, wanted to know where his money was. Well, here you go. Here's $1 billion. This administration listened to you. So here it is. It's just unbelievable, Dave. But I don't know if you have anything else you want to add to that.
No. That's not necessary.
I'm getting it off my chest.
That's why I'm just sitting back and letting you go.
And then you have Moscow, and they're going to suspend nuclear inspections, U.S. inspections of its nuclear weapons facilities. Now, this was part of a mutual inspection agreement under the 2010 New START treaty. And an Iranian satellite launched yesterday from a Russian-controlled base in Kazakhstan, and amid Western suspicion that it will be used to help Moscow's war. Of course, Tehran denies this. Russia has reportedly begun stripping some of its planes to get spare parts that it can no longer obtain. I don't know about that, but so again, but we do have two more ships left Ukraine carrying produce. Now this was part of the deal that was brokered by Turkey to get some crucial food supplies out to the rest of the world. So that was good. That was needed.
Yeah, that's a good sign. This Moscow. A pullback on the nuclear weapon inspections it would be a problem in most periods of time. It strikes me that they're doing this now will come back as some kind of bargaining chip in the future, as whether it's to, you know, as part of the resolution of the war. Or in some other respect, I guess we'll see. But we're launching an Iranian satellite, it just so happened that we tell you it's going to be flying mainly over Eastern Europe and Russia. We're interested in weather patterns in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's just some additional spying going on, and in who's going to benefit from it is got to be no mystery.
Hmm.
It's a dangerous time right now. A lot of saber rattling going on, whether it's between U.S. and Russia, U.S. and the Russia and Ukraine, Belarus, certainly China and Taiwan. There's certainly a lot to keep our eye on. And I wouldn't become overly paranoid, ladies and gentlemen, about it. But I think you need to pay attention to it, because if things, in fact, do ramp up even more, it's not going to be good for markets. And that includes, certainly precious metal markets should end up benefiting all other things being equal. But it's another reason, if you're a major paper market investor, you better pay close attention to geopolitics, because they could certainly play a big part in movements beyond fundamental things like inflation and interest rates over the coming months.
And it's just one of those things, the geopolitics, you know, it is one of those things where you wake up and the world has changed.
Yeah.
And I do believe that's what's going to happen. We're going to wake up one day and the world is going to change. And you have the China banks, they're getting U.S. taxpayer banking. Now, this was Pam and Russ Martins of Wall Street on Parade. This is their piece, who report that the Fed recently released its 2021 annual report. And there was one passage that in the report that says, as of year-end 2021, a total of 135 foreign banks from 48 countries operated 144 state-licensed branches and agencies, of which 6 were insured by the FDIC, and 50 OCC-licensed branches and agencies, of which 4 were insured by the FDIC. Altogether, the U.S. offices of these foreign banks controlled approximately 17%, that's a big number, of U.S. commercial banking assets. Of course, the FDIC, of course, we know is supposedly the deposit insurance funded by taxpayers. Now, we all know they would never be able to cover any big defaults and so forth, but they go on and ask, why should the U.S. taxpayers be insuring foreign bank deposits in the U.S., especially since federal regulators cannot even provide adequate oversight on domestic mega banks? They point to big foreign banks like Barclays, UBS, Deutsche Bank, HSBC, TD Bank, and others, which have had the FDIC insured branches in the U.S. for many, many years. But the Martins were shocked to find that the two banks owned by the People's Republic of China, the Bank of China and Industrial and Commercial Bank of China USA, they were also operating FDIC insured offices in the U.S., Dave. You know, well, it really is amazing.
Oh, my. Well, that's a good one here. The Martins say that, according to the FDIC, Bank of China's FDIC locations in the U.S. had about $17 billion in deposits here as of June 30th last year. The ICB of China USA held about $2.3 billion. For years, the Martins write, China has thumbed its nose at U.S. accounting laws, while the SEC blindly allowed China to continue to list dubious securities on U.S. exchanges. And of course, there are other scandals. I don't know if you remember the drywall scandal, resulting in about 100,000 homes built in the U.S. had to be torn apart, rebuilt in 20 states because they were built with toxic drywall imported from China. Could cost $15 to $25 billion to replace that, according to National Underwriter, an insurance industry publication. And of course, there was China's baby formula scandal, ongoing human rights abuses of Uyghurs, and the latest threats against Nancy Pelosi over her trip last week to Taiwan. Martins conclude, while we certainly don't want to see any military escalation of tensions with China, it's never a good idea to send the message to China that the U.S. is going to continue to look the other way at its abuses. The fact that the People's Republic have approved bank charters for operation in the U.S. is really astounding. I'm not sure that that was the intention of the globalization of world business as it's evolved over the last few decades. But
I believe it's exactly where we are. You know, I couldn't believe that how the Chinese the government is buying up properties close to our military bases, hundreds of thousands of acres, billions of dollars being spent, and everybody just turns a blind eye. These administrations in the past, you know, 30 years have been, and longer, have been allowing China just to do exactly what they're doing. We've gave them the technology. We continue to give them the technology. They don't steal it. We give it to them. And it truly is amazing that no one says anything. They might provide some lip service every now and then. You might have a politician come out that provides a little bit of lip service to, you know, the people of this country. But for the most part, they turned a blind eye.
They complain about it. But problem is, it's while they're sitting in the office of the Chinese foreign minister drinking a martini and winking and nodding with their best dinner or bridge partner. So, regardless of how you see yourself politically, ladies and gentlemen, there is just a lot of rampant, downright hypocrisy and corruption. And it's no wonder there's such widespread unhappiness with institutions around the world.
So how does it get fixed? They'll continue until it just falls on its own. It'll collapse on its own because that's what they do. They will take and take until there is nothing left to take. And I don't think we're that far from there. But we don't know. Let's go ahead. Drugstores are offering to offer primary care as they aim to bundle a bunch of, as they seem concerned about consumers' health. According to Axios, bundling individual services under one roof and one brand would deepen store ties with customers and patients, providing them a one-stop shop for doctor's visits, insurance, and pharmaceuticals. I don't know. I don't want to go to a drugstore for my medical care.
I just don't. I'll go there for a shot of something, maybe for my annual flu shot, but that's it. I want to pick up my meds there and buy my mouthwash. My razor blades.
Yeah, I don't want to have them involved. But I know they're already deeply involved in people's health care. They try to be. Like if you get a prescription for a particular medication, the drugstore will send out something to the doctor and saying, well, you know, this person is taking this medication. Perhaps you need to add this. We suggest that this be added. So to some degree, they're already involved, and it really is the consumer, the person that's sitting in a doctor's office say, no, or yes, explain it to me, and put the doctor on the spot, and you have the right to say yay or nay.
Absolutely.
So it's taking control of your health care, but again, they make it more difficult for us to to take care of our health care. But the CVS CEO, Karen Lynch, told analysts on an earnings call the other day that the company is determined to acquire or take stake in a primary care provider by the end of the year. Amazon just beat out CVS to acquire One Medical, but Lynch and her team says their existing physical footprint is already a huge advantage. I just saw UPS buying up some sort of a medical facility. And I'm thinking, UPS, why don't they just concentrate on delivering packages? So I think it's because these, and I'm correct me if I'm wrong, which I might be, these, like Amazon, UPS, they're going to provide for their employees.
Yes.
Which means they dictate their employees' health. Like, you're 10 pounds overweight, you're fired.
There's certainly a danger in that.
Scary.
And, I see it in a related vein, that being that the more private practices or these corporate health entities are being bought up by these companies, be they healthcare companies or otherwise, is going to mean less competition and not more. Now, Amazon buying up something for their own employees is one thing that you ought to be wary enough about. CVS and Rite Aid and other quote healthcare providers buying up for the general public use is another thing altogether. And they try and spin this by saying, well, we'll be able to use the pricing
to save you money trick.
Yes, the power of numbers. Thank you. To bring down prices for you, our cherished customer. And, when there are just two or three health networks remaining, by and large, hospitals excluded, it doesn't take a whole lot for a little bit of collusion.
Yeah, but a lot of these hospitals, though, are also owned by these health firms that will be bought up by some of these large corporations.
Well, and plus,
now they're going to be getting subsidies from the government. So, it is just amazing, and it's really sad. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of clients' this final segment. You call her at 1-800-375-4188. Now, I haven't been able to research this next topic as much as I've wanted to, so I'm a little wary about talking too much about it. But there is an article in the New York Times today about the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. Wink, wink. I saw reports in roughly the 2 weeks leading up to this bill's passage. Well, it still has to be passed by the House and signed into law by Biden. But and the most optimistic assessment, and if anyone has any other figures in this, I'm happy to hear about them. The most optimistic assessment in terms of how much inflation is going to be reduced by this is 0.3%, in the first year anyway. The long-term impact, who knows? It's got to be dubious. Anything that promises in its title to do something, you got to look behind it and at the details. Now, there are those who've been doing that, there's going to be a question of who's going to pay for this, who it's going to benefit. Besides its climate provisions, the advocates now are saying that the bill's health care provisions will have the most substantial changes and benefits to health policy since the passage of Obamacare 12 years ago. Again, it still has to be passed by the House, which it's expected to either later this week or early next. Now, in terms of health care, the bill does set out to reduce Americans' medical costs in two ways. First, it has these federal subsidies to reduce the cost of health insurance and prescription drugs. More on the health insurance in a minute. And then secondly, the bill gives Medicare officials, first time, the power to negotiate with pharmaceutical companies, which the advocates say will likely reduce the price that the companies charge for those drugs. And for these reasons, the bill is said to be using the healthcare system to reduce economic inequality with the vast amounts of benefits supposedly flowing to poor, working class, and middle class families. Admirable goals, if you will, on the one hand, but on the other, in reality, I guess we'll have to wait and see. Some who question the value of this say it's really a sham, that the wealthy won't pay for it, that the middle class will get the brunt of the deal, just like many other government programs, which start out with good intentions, but in the follow-through, in the execution, it just doesn't turn out that way, if in fact that was the intention to begin with. Corporations will just pass many of these costs on to us. And what that does is, or I should say, I guess I should ask it because I don't know. Does that reduce inflation as it's intended to? Or will it
as it seems on the surface, more likely to increase it, particularly in the long run. Well, all good intentions aside, the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, nonpartisan analytical arm of Congress, which I worked for 6 years back in the 80s, estimates that the law will reduce the number of new drugs introduced over the next 30 years by about 1%. People like Judy Kobansky of the Kaiser Family Foundation says that doesn't seem that big of a deal. Also sets a $2,000 annual cap on the amount of money that any senior pays for drugs. After the cap is hit, the government, private insurers, or drug companies will pay the remaining bills. And drugs are capped at $2,000 a year that people in Medicare, anyway, have to pay. So, again, we could spend an awful lot of time, more time on this, and perhaps on Thursday or next week, Melody and I will get into this. Whatever the case, it's clear that once this bill is signed into law, the president, congressional Democrats, still have a lot of work to do to make sure the public knows exactly what they need to do to reap whatever benefits are coming their way. Now, our latest American Survivor newsletter has hit the streets. In addition to Wendy Melody's weekly recap of the financial markets, Doug Nolan's weekly credit bulletin blog writes about the Fed's indefensible neutral rate doctrine. Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs sounds off about science lying about the cause of depression. Plus, I have an article that asks, do consumer inflation expectations suggest relief is coming? According to the New York Fed, Americans expect inflation to drop precipitously over the next 3 years, 3 to 5 years, excuse me. And Neil Irwin of Axios says that's great news for anyone who doesn't want current prices to become the new normal. The New York Fed's July survey of consumer expectations released today shows marked drops in how households expect inflation to be across a variety of time horizons, 1 to 5 years. History shows that the higher we expect inflation to be, the more likely it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, particularly as businesses feel more comfortable raising prices and workers demand steeper wages. In that sense, Irwin says falling inflation expectations are a welcome sign that the high inflation of last year is not causing a long-lasting shift in Americans' psychology around money. But inflation expectations in the July survey remain far above the levels that we saw in the years before the pandemic, and are well above the 2% inflation rate that the Fed is targeting. In fact, consumers expect inflation to be 6.2% over the next year. That's down from 6.8 in June. It's the steepest one-month drop since the survey began 9 years ago. Potential good news, I guess, lies in expectations over the next 3 years having fallen to 3.2%. from 3.6, and the five-year expectations to 2.3 from 2.8. Now, Irwin reports that these drops have been most pronounced among survey respondents making less than $50,000. He surmises that a possible reflection of those consumers who were most affected by soaring oil, gasoline, and food prices have been seeing relief at gas pumps over the last month. Fed Chair Jerome Powell mentioned the New York Fed's results as reason to continue aggressive rate increases at the FOMC's June policy meeting. Thus, Irwin believes the falling expectations will likely give aid and comfort to the central bank.
If you missed last weekend's Kansas Bankers Association meeting, you probably didn't see the latest sign that the Fed won't be taking a softer line on its rate hiking crusade, at least in the near future. Fed Governor Michelle Bowman says she envisions keeping 75 basis point increases on the table until inflation is literally quashed. Irwin points to the Fed's July policy meeting, after which many investors started buying into the notion that the Fed wouldn't raise rates too much higher and could even end up easing next year. Still, traders in the CMA Fed fund rate futures market believe there's a 68% probability that the FOMC will raise the Fed funds rate another 75 basis points at its September 2021 meeting. Another 58% seeing an additional 25 basis point increase in early November. Recently, however, a number of officials pushed back on potential Fed moderation, though Irwin notes that until Bowman's speech, all of them were presidents of regional Fed banks and not on the board of governors. In supporting the Fed July hike, Bowman said, "My view is that similarly sized increases should be on the table until we see inflation declining in a consistent, meaningful, and lasting way." And we've heard that same theme several times from Powell as well since the Fed started its tightening campaign earlier this year. Bowman said the Fed's practice of giving forward guidance on its future actions is flawed, and one reason it was behind the curve on addressing inflation in the first place. She said that overly specific guidance offered in December 2020 was a big factor that led to a delay in taking action to address rising inflation. As an aside, the New York Fed July survey also shows that consumer expectations for their own wages remain stable, if moderating somewhat. Americans, in fact, see their earnings rising 3% over the next year, as they have for seven straight months. And despite the volatile economy, we remain generally optimistic about the labor market overall. Survey respondents see a fairly sanguine 11.8% probability of losing their job involuntarily over the next year, which edged down slightly from 11.9% in June. But listen to this. Nearly 20% said there's a good probability of their leaving their job voluntarily over the next year. Now, a Cleveland paper once surmised that if people expect inflation to be lower and they act on those beliefs, they could, in fact, cause inflation to be lower. At the same time, if businesses expect lower inflation, they may raise prices at a slower rate, because they don't want the prices of their items to look too out of line with those of their competitors. Well, a Bureau of Labor Statistics study in 2019 looked at how inflation expectations overshot or undershot actual inflation before, during, and after the Great Recession. This was from through 2018. The BLS had these three major conclusions. First, market-based inflation expectations, as measured by the Treasury break-even inflation curve, reasonably approximated actual CPI-U inflation in the years before, during, and after the Great Recession. Estimates of inflation expectations undershot actual inflation for short-term maturity horizons and overshot it for long-term maturity horizons. But I think in all cases, it was less than one percentage point. And inflation expectations approximated inflation reality more precisely for long-term rates than for short-term rates. Well, look, if past is prologue, and it often isn't, and with signs pointing toward Americans seeing high inflation as temporary, dare we say transitory, we could actually see some price relief in the next year, two, or three. Of course, what happens in the meantime is anyone's guess. Now, one of the Fed's big concerns is that inflation expectations become unanchored, creating a persistent, self-fulfilling upward price spiral. So it is notable and important that this isn't happening right now, at least according to the July Fed survey. And speaking of inflation expectations, Jan Hatzius, who's chief economist at Too Big to Fail Goldman Sachs, expressed surprise that these measures were so low, given that inflation itself is at its highest level in over 40 years. Hatzius said, if you'd given me all the inflation-related indicators other than the expectation measures a year ago and had asked me to predict the expectation measures, I would have given you a much higher number. That's really kind of odd. Inflation is super high, and not only that, the whole transitory messaging of the Fed was a debacle. And that's according to Joe Wiesenthal, Bloomberg. We also know that inflation is a huge top-of-mind issue for the general public. And yet, when asked where inflation is going to go a few years out, the outlook is pretty subdued. What does that mean? Does that mean the Fed has a lot of credibility with the public? There's such confidence that things are going to normalize? I don't know about that. There's something else, albeit a bit more speculative. When the pandemic hit in March 2020, we saw the biggest wave of layoffs in U.S. history. Public's perception of the health of the labor market tumbled, but it didn't fall quite as far as you might expect. In fact, it only fell back to 2014 levels. In other words, public correctly perceived the employment weakness of spring 2020 to be, well, transitory. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Thursday, which will join. Well, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, besides the fact that that Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs will be here. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks so much to our producer, Todd, to your loyal listeners for tuning in. Financial survival. Safe out there. Have a good night. Bye-bye.